All right, let's go ahead and get started with the agenda. Agenda is there. I believe, Marcus, you said that you wanted to get a decision on which issue first?
It's, I think, 120, if I remember correctly, about expanding, about supporting ID objects in that type.
Yeah.
I don't know, either we, or we can also push the grammar stuff to the end of the telecon. I don't mind.
Well, we should, I mean, I think that decision might be fairly straightforward, so we might as well make a decision on that and close, or, well, I guess the issue is resolved, so we need to make sure that we're completely resolved there. Let's see, Francois is not here. Nicholas, would you mind scribing today?
Oh, sure.
Thanks. All right, so first up is issue 120. This was expanding type to ID objects, and I believe that, if I remember correctly, we decided that we're not going to expand type to ID objects, and the question today is whether or not we allow people to express type using an ID object, and whether or not that throws an exception. So do we have any proposals on the table here? Marcus, is there a proposal to how to handle it if someone uses ID? I don't know if you're muted or not.
Well, I'll jump in. So I think we've pretty much gone away from throwing exceptions to doing callback types of things. So that might be a way to handle it is to if we see type with a object ID pattern or array with object ID pattern, that we could do some form of callback which would allow the application to do something. But, you know, I continue to feel that it's important to support that pattern in the case that we're importing something, say, where it was some JSON that used a type construct that wasn't treated as a type on import, but where we want to cast it to be a JSON LD type.
All right. So I guess the other question is, would we end up would we end up not even calling that callback and auto-correcting it ourselves? I mean, there's no other way to interpret that. Or should we go ahead and just call the callback anyway? Meaning that in the future we might want to use some kind of expanded form like that, and so we might as well start calling the callback now to future-proof ourselves a bit.
Well, I think we probably need to figure out a little bit more about exactly how callbacks work. Is it really an event, like an event bubble mechanism where if it returns, true that you continue propagating it, or in false you abort propagating it, and then the logic for how to deal with it is dealt in propagation? I don't know that we really got into this whole callback mechanism.
We haven't yet, and it's something that we probably should really discuss on one of the calls coming up.
I do think, and I expect, that the default behavior is if you're running this in a sort of a non-programmatic context, say like from a distiller or the playground, where there, you haven't implemented something, that we do the most liberal thing. In this case, you would actually use the ID.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Well, then it sounds like the proposal is to called a callback to deal with the issue, I guess. So I forget what we even call that callback. Basically, called the it's not an error callback. It's not an exception callback.
I don't think has anyone implemented it. Yeah, I don't know that anyone's even implemented it. So, I think the idea should be that a callback is invoked, which has the ability to cancel the operation, and otherwise, it is managed.
Okay. So when ID is found as a value in an object associated with type, a handler callback is called to determine whether processing should continue. Let's see. I guess there's another this might be kind of a tri-state operation, meaning that you want processing to stop, you want to just ignore the value, or you want to handle the value and continue. So we have to remember
that. You can always make processing stop by just throwing an exception from your callback.
That's true. So you're saying it's still a binary operation. It's either, yes, I handled the issue, continue, or no, I didn't.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, and I guess, we need to discuss that in depth. So when ID is found as a value, go ahead.
Well, this was Marcus' issue, and he had to jump, apparently. So maybe we want to just...
Sorry, it's like crazy.
Oh, you're back. No, you're back.
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay, great. Okay.
Yeah, just
so Marcus, the
window.
Oh.
Yeah.
So we're wondering if there was a proposal or you had a proposal. The proposal, I think, right now is when ID is found as a value in an object associated with type, a handler callback is called to handle the issue. And then we don't go into detail on what exactly that handler does because we still need to spec that out in the JSON-LD API.
Yeah, I think that's what I wanted to see.
Okay. All right. So there we go. Plus one, minus one, plus zero, that. And Stefan, feel free to plus one, minus one, plus zero this stuff if you want, or if you have an opinion. None of the stuff that we do on this call is binding, so you know, it just shows support for the proposal.
Well, basically, this proposal means that if anything except a simple string is found, right? It's not just if ID is found, so if an object with other properties or whatever is found.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So if you got let's say you had an integer. I mean, clearly that's not something we would be able to process automatically, but a callback should occur.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
But if we can process it, if it is something that is either a subject reference or possibly even a subject definition, then we should go ahead and treat it as a type IRI.
Right. Yeah, so, okay, so to clarify, the handler callback is called whenever any non-conforming data is found. And I'm putting non-conforming in quotes because we still need to decide exactly what non-conforming means.
Yeah.
Okay. Does that address issue 120 completely, Marcus?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
All right. Well, next up is issue 114, the Jason LD Grammar. Let me get a link to this. So there have been a number of people, Andy Seaborn being the person that's pushing the most in the RDF working group, that would like to see a more formal grammar for Jason LD. Now, I think Pierre-Antoine also wanted something like that. I think the issue that we've raised around that is that just because you don't match the grammar doesn't mean that the document's invalid completely, you know, because of this handler mechanism that we have. So so someone can put in, you know, junk data or invalid data or you know, weird data, and it's up to the developer to figure out a translation for that data or just drop it entirely.
If you had a turtle document that was invalid, a processor likely performs some form of error recovery and generates the triples that it can. The same is true with RDFA. So it's possible to have we don't necessarily need to say it's not conforming in order to allow it to continue to be useful.
Okay, so you're saying this is what can be handled automatically. So we don't say non-conforming; we just say this is effectively what the JSON processor will read in without calling the handler.
I would say that a JSON LD processor, when encountering a non-conforming document, must perform at least one, you know, callback used for to signal the point that was found to be non-conforming, and a processor should continue processing unless explicitly told not to, say via an exception thrown.
All right.
And that's in the spirit of processing pretty much any RDF document.
Right. Okay, well then I guess the proposal would be to specify the JSON LD grammar. Specify JSON LD grammar such that a JSON LD processor will not invoke the for lack of a better word, error handler when processing the document. So basically, if you match that grammar, the error callback will not be called. No handler callbacks will be called.
But what's the difference in saying that if a document is not according to the grammar we are about to define, then it's not conformant?
I don't know if JSON LD really has. So the difficult thing with JSON LD, I think, is that it's not like other languages where there's a definite conforming document and a document that's definitely not conforming. Because you can mix JSON in there. So we don't make the statement that a JSON LD document with JSON mixed in there that doesn't map to anything is non-conforming, right?
No,
because
but
we
already specified that we are ignoring such data automatically.
But the way most grammars go when you define a grammar, so for example, if you define the turtle grammar, anything outside of that grammar, if you specify anything that doesn't match with that grammar, you have a non-conforming turtle document. So we just need to be very careful about how we say this to make sure that people know that just because you don't match the grammar doesn't mean that the document is not a valid JSON LD document.
Yeah, for instance, in a turtle document, if you have a literal with a language and the language does not conform to BCP 47 or whatever it is, my guess is almost every turtle processor will generate it with that language anyway. But that strictly speaking, the document is not conforming.
Right. So we need to be careful about how we express that to the developers, because there's certainly a chance here that people would get confused by it, right?
Yeah. Now, the other thing is, if in JSON, if the last element in an object ends with a comma, the document is nonconforming, and my processor probably won't handle it.
Yeah.
Because the JSON parsers tend to be pretty strict. But you could certainly imagine processors that would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, I guess conforming, this JSON LD grammar to be conforming requires the JSON grammar to be, so that's where we could probably say something about conforming, is that the document conformance means that the document is a conforming JSON document. That's the lowest level there. So you have to be a conforming JSON document to be a conforming JSON LD document. And then anything on top, I'm having a hard time.
Well, I think there's more to it. And I think the reason why they wanted a grammar was we had spread out throughout the document the various different syntactic pieces. And it would be useful to know that, okay, a JSON document can be an array or an object. If it is an object, it can contain a context, and then the context must conform to the grammar, the context grammar. Other keys that to expect there are ID and type, and then any other keys, et cetera, and then sort of iterate down a hypothetical document structure, and that allows you to look in one place and sort of understand really what to expect from the structure of a grammar. But it can be done in a less than absolutely formal case. In terms of getting into details, for instance, if type contains an array with an object in it, how that's handled, that doesn't necessarily need to be spelled out in the grammar position. The grammar would spell out what the signature should look like, but we can spell out in the type processing itself how to handle what to do with those types of conditions. At least that's my understanding from what the comments that I saw come in.
All right. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah. I wonder what... To what extent we need to keep this in the abstract. I think that from what I've seen, there are just a few cases where we need to handle non-canonical expressions. And the specific case we've mostly encountered is where you are coercing to an ID, but you have a value, an object, which is a JavaScript object with an ID keyword. And the other cases are possibly certain other kinds of coercion where you have value coercion for literals, and instead of a string, you actually have an object which is something with the key value. And I wonder if you can't just define these specific cases and say that in these cases, in the first case, if you coerce to ID and you have an entire object there, the object will be thrown away, but the ID value will be kept. And in a similar way, if you coerce to a specific data type and you have the correct expanded literal as a value, you use the string. In this case, nothing is thrown away. In any other case, if, for instance, you have coerced to a literal, but you have an object with an ID keyword or a language or something like that, you will throw an error. And similarly, if you use a literal, expanded literal object as the value for type, you will throw an error. Are there any other cases?
Well, in the other cases, whenever you have something that doesn't map at all, I guess we do say that you ignore that.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if we shouldn't also call a handler callback if they register one.
I think
they might want to do a translation, but not have to modify the context.
Yeah, but that's more of a nice to have, and I think that if we just define this, we wouldn't really need the callbacks anyway. Somebody could pre-process if they need very application-specific fallback mechanisms.
Right. Okay, so do we want to express this grammar in EBNF, or do we want to do it in prose, which is what we have now, I guess?
We don't really even have it in prose in one place. That's, I think, sort of the key.
I thought we had that big. Remember, Marcus went through and iterated on what the items were, and I put that in the spec text. I remember putting it in the spec text.
Yeah, no, it is there, but I don't think that. I think that is probably not complete enough, and it needs to be expounded on a little bit more.
So what's your preference, prose or EBNF or something else?
Well, I started on EBNF, but that is a difficult task, and I think the feedback from Andy in particular was that EBNF was probably not appropriate. So I think it should be prose, but I think it's probably more expanded, and if I... Let me see if I can find that section. I think that what Marcus had was sort of like a list. Let's see. What section is that? Syntax?
It's very
Thank you.
I also agree that the EBNF doesn't sound to be applicable. I mean, it's not parsing stuff. It's not... like we're parsing the strings, but we interpret the resulting object of parsed JSON.
So I think that what Marcus has here is a terse representation of what we want for the grammar. I think it needs to be expanded a little further and perhaps should include some more examples. I don't know let's see what Andy said in particular. That it's just not clear to him.
I'm wondering if a table would be easier for people to understand with these steps as kind of notes on that table.
I think a table looks still very abstract, and if we do something that's really just prose, then we can highlight it with examples along the way, which would make it a lot clearer to people, I think, what's going on.
But what I don't understand is how is that any different from what we've done above in the document in all those sections above there, right? We have, you know, examples. We have prose, and then we have the example. I thought what Andy was looking for is something that summarizes what you can do in a way that's fairly easy to understand what the structure of these documents look like.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I think that what we did above, though, it's not like, okay, we are now describing the elements of an object. Is we start off with a basic description of an object, then we start introducing concepts along the way. So there's not one section you can go to and say, you know, what are the things that I can put into an object here or into a value object or things like that. So I think it was sort of a matter of, and maybe it is repeating elements that occur in the prose above, but doing it in a sort of a more of a top-down rather than bottom-up fashion.
Do you feel like you have a pretty good idea of what needs to be done in this section, Craig?
Well, it's something I could take a stab at if I had the time. to get into it. that being the operative term, I'm also in the middle of a microdata update, not to mention a paying client. So
right.
I don't have a lot of time to put into it. But I can. Why don't I commit to a half a day's worth of work this week and see if I can have something improved by next week.
Okay, that's good. Maybe what this is going to require is just us taking a couple of different shots, a couple of different approaches on how to explain this and describe it in a more formal way, and then just kind of seeing if that works for Pierre Antoine and Andy, and going from there.
By the way, Mono and I think discussed this on IRC, but we can actually change the issue numbers that show up in the spec to be our issues, and I have a patch request in to make it so that they'll link back to the issues as well.
Yeah.
If you're using it's data-number as part of the tag containing the issue marker, the issue class. So
yeah,
if I get into this before anyone else, I'll take a stab at that.
Great. Thanks for adding that feature to Respec, Greg. That's great. It'll definitely help people kind of understand and follow to where the issues actually are. All right. So I guess the proposal on the table is to formalize the JSON, to include and formalize the JSON LD grammar. The way we're going to do that is still kind of up in the air, and I guess we're going to just, Greg's going to take a shot at it. I might jump in there and take a shot at it, and we'll see how that progresses. We'll see if Andy feels that it should be done in a different way or not. Does that seem like an acceptable path forward? Anyone disagree with that path forward?
Sounds good, I think.
Okay.
So I think we agree on doing that in prose, right?
Yeah, it's going to be prose. It's definitely not going to be ABNF. I think it's going to be in prose, and hopefully we'll have supporting tables or figures or explanations in there to make it clear. Whatever makes it clear is what we're going to try to do. But ABNF is out, I'm pretty sure. The proposal is express the JSON LD grammar in prose with supporting tables, examples, clarify that violating the grammar does not necessarily mean that a JSON LD document is non-conforming. I guess we should say it's not valid.
Actually, that's not the way I'd say it. Yeah, that a processor will not process a non-conforming document. I think it's important to say that a document is conforming if it does not violate any of the constraints placed on it within the spec. But just because it's non-conforming does not mean that a processor will not... a processor must note that some way, but it probably still generates data.
Okay, so violating the grammar does not necessarily mean that a JSON LD processor will not process the document. Is that good?
Yes.
All right, plus one, minus one, plus zero.
I do think that we can and should express what kind of violations are possible to handle. I mean, if you start to use the graph keyword with context contents or, I don't know, any kind of permutations would be very poor, and processors should probably choke on that just because they can't deterministically process it correctly. But
right.
There are local deviations or non-valid out forms or shapes, like the coercion cases and the, well, mostly the coercion cases, probably some more, and we should and could probably exemplify all of those.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I agree. I think we're, let's see, where would we do that? I think we would end up doing that in the API spec. No. Yeah.
I think we can do it in the syntax.
Yeah, I think that should also be included in the grammar then.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
we would include it in the grammar by saying you must not include graph in a context, you must not include
Only what things are possible to... I mean, we know when the processor is in a state when it's looking for something specific, and there are certain shapes which doesn't match that, but which are deterministically expressing that, like ID in type declarations.
Mm-hmm.
So they are extractable from non-conformant expressions, if you will.
Yeah.
Well, the same is true if you have a value object that contains keys in there other than value type or language, that is non-conforming. If in a context, if you have a expanded term definition with other keys in there, I think that's also non-conforming, but certainly recoverable.
Well, that's conforming because we say that they are allowed but ignored, right?
Well, I guess where we say that, then yes, it is conforming.
I
think there are cases where we say that other keys are not allowed.
Yeah. I mean, if you have a literal with data type and language, we should say that's not conformant, but we could define a recovery for it, like data type always takes precedence.
Yeah, these rules are. I'm concerned that these rules are getting fairly complicated. There are more of them now than I think I can keep in my head. So why don't we go ahead and take a first pass at the grammar and make sure that we have everything in there and see if that it looks too complicated. I mean, there might come a point here where we just say, for simplicity of people's understanding, for simplicity's sake, we are going to not allow certain types of markup, we're going to leave it unspecified as to what the processor should do. So, for example, Nicholas, you just said, you know, well, there might be a pattern that we don't want in there. Well, we might just make it so that the processor is, it's undefined. The vast majority of the stuff's undefined. Or maybe there's a clean way of writing these rules that makes it a little easier to understand. Okay.
In any case.
I think Greg and I are taking an action to basically try do a second pass on the grammar that we have there and try and make it more understandable and more complete. Anything else on this issue before we move on?
I think we put that in there. It actually shows up in the minutes.
Yeah. All right. Next item up is, let's see, allowing terms to expand to multiple IRIs. This was brought up for the Drupal use case. Yes, and Stefan, both Stefan and Lynn have kind of talked about this being nice to have. So, I guess the biggest question is, do we want to support this feature? I know that the way the implementations are done right now, it's supposed to be, you know, one term only maps to one IRI. That's just the way it's been. Now we would allow one term to map to multiple IRIs. Thoughts on allowing or disallowing this? Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I thought about it even before this was brought up. I think many of you have had this in the back of your minds because it's similar to RDFA. I think that in our situation, it does complicate things, certainly. I mean, it's one thing to use this when you're interpreting compact JSON, so that when you're expanding it, you have more than one triple for each key. That's a simple thing to do. But compacting data is quite harder. If you use the context with these kinds of terms, we have to say that either applying a context like this is a sort of poor man's inference in that data will magically appear, which doesn't exist in the input, or, which is much more complex but more proper, using a context like this should only match for the terms if there are expressions in the data using both of the property IRIs with the same value. In any other case, the term wouldn't match, and the expanded form would be kept in the compacted data because the term is only applicable when there are two statements, or three, or whatever, with the same value and the same property.
Greg, you're on the queue.
Yeah, so I can really see that for expressing data, this type of thing is quite useful. But my opinion is that we've painted ourselves into a corner when it comes to applying such context when doing compaction, sort of as Nicholas pointed out. I think there's already other examples where we output things that are non-intuitive because we are strictly adhering to the requirements of using the expression the context expression. So, for instance, if you happen to have something that isn't a date that you use as a term, then we don't actually output that term, even though it would be obvious. And I think that this is such as an example of that, where we maybe want to separate the amount of stuff that can be expressed in the context from what is actually used when performing compaction. There's another case where there's been some discussion about having a context that includes some recursive elements so that you have sort of a subcontext included. That would be a nightmare to try to perform automatically when compacting data. So I think we should sort of separate these concepts somewhat and perhaps try to simplify context compaction so that we're not having to do so much work in pattern matching to do the absolute perfect job of compacting a document. Now, basically, I want, as an author, I want to be able to use these forms to express data, but as a processor writer, I do not want to have to try to put all the logic in to automatically apply that.
That sounds, I've thought something like that also. I like that.
Okay, so, but I guess, so let's split this into two things. One of them is the issues that are related to compaction that seem like they have solutions, some of them simple, some of them complex. But the more fundamental question is whether we want to support this at all. Right. So, Nicholas, Greg, is there a feeling, do you want to support this, thumbs up, thumbs down?
I'd like to support it when interpreting documents. for when doing performing expansion, I'd like to support it. I would not like to support it when doing compaction.
Yeah, I same answer from me. If we, given, provided that we can and want to define a distinction between context features only used for interpreting and not for compacting, then I would have a thumb up for this and certain other forms we've discussed previously.
Marcus, you're in the queue.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that feature is really, I mean, required, because it's rather trivial in a RESTful API, for example, to have different representations or do content negotiation or something like that. I mean, it's really just switching the context. You can, well, you just pass a IRI parameter, for example, to select a different vocabulary or something like that. So I don't know if it's really necessary to kind of load up JSON-LD with these things.
So I think the Stefan, I don't know if you can talk a bit more about this. I know that Lynn felt pretty strongly that it was a good feature to have. I don't know, Stefan, if you feel that it's kind of a must-have for Drupal or not.
Coming from a similar angle as Lynn, in the sense that where it seems that people using RDFA or microdata have this feature kind of built in, being able to put in several properties into the same attribute. So they would kind of expect maybe to have the same feature available in JSON-LD. That's for potentially using two sub-properties from the same vocabulary, or using different properties from different vocabularies. Like, for example, folk nick and folk type ID, or folk name and RDFS label. We do use that feature in Drupal 7 right now in RDFA, combined for RDFS label, for example. And this is ITIL. So it seems we would have to remove that when we move to Drupal 8. It means also that whatever RDFA or microdata serialization we use would have to be aware of the fact that the JSON-LD serialization will be limited. And it might mean that we have to lock RDFA and microdata, prevent them from serializing multiple properties. Not that we come to it, it's just it's going to be more verbose, and then we have more. We have to split a term. We have to break a term into two terms to map the same values to two properties. Right, so it's added complexity and more verbose.
Right. Greg, you're on the queue.
Yeah, it just struck me that a possible consequence of this would be to allow key object keys to have a space-separated list of properties. That would be most equivalent to the way it's done in RDFA, where you, say, have, with DC title and schema name or something like that, space separated within the key position, which would be that sort of makes it more natural to express the same thing in the context where you can say that name expands, that a single term expands, say, to such a space separated string of terms, and then through further processing that is treated as basically two different properties.
Yeah, I'm concerned about that approach because it's very foreign to JSON developers. I think we should. I think it would be a neat trick, certainly. I'm concerned about being able to use that data in any way, right? So, you know, you might be looking for schema colon name and foaf colon name, but what happens when one of the developers reverses the order of that, right? So do you have to then, you know, search every single key for both of those items? It seems... I don't think that feature would work out really well. I think it looks kind of like a it would really stick out. It wouldn't it's not very JSON-y. It's not very, you know, JavaScript-y. So if we do end up doing this feature, I'd much rather see us modify the context to allow multiple IDs per term than, you know, allowing multiple terms to be placed in the key position.
Well, the other question is, what are or who are the clients of those JSON-LD documents? I mean, like in RDFA, it's certainly search engines and other crawlers which have their own, well, supported vocabularies, but I don't know if that's really a use case for JSON-LD in Drupal. So maybe Stefan can tell us something about that.
Well, so there is one proposal in a Drupal community to use JSON-LD and to define a local namespace of properties from the schema. And that would be used for sharing data across the same site from staging server to a production server, for example. And at the same time, we would want to support also standardized vocabularies like schema.org or Devin Core. So we wouldn't want to have to choose between one vocabulary or the other. We'd like to be able to support more than one vocabulary.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
There are ways to support more than one, but do you have to support them at the same time for one client?
Well, it means that when the client requests a JSON document, they would have to say what vocabulary they understand.
You don't do that for HTML now.
No.
I presume you don't do that for HTML now. So you have an HTML document, and you use both, say, schema and foaf, or seok, in that document.
And exactly. And what if the remote doesn't support the vocabulary you understand? You could also use content negotiation, but that's a whole different mechanism. And we didn't feel it was mature enough to really be relied on. And it's not something we do in HTML. I have the feeling it would also confuse people, because then, depending on the headers, it's different JSON-LD document. It's potentially confusing.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. The Koenig approach hasn't been used for RDF in general in any place when sharing data. You say as much as you can in as many dialects as you can, and the client...
It's not part of the mainstream setup mechanism that people are used to.
No, because and sometimes you're not the end user, you're just tunneling data for someone else, and then you will lose that if you...
Right,
and
there's also the case of, imagine two consumers, one of them is like a very generic consumer, which might understand only like a couple of properties from your document, and imagine a second consumer that's more specialized and can understand all of the properties. So you might use two vocabularies in that context. As the producer of the JSON-LD document, you would use a generic vocabulary of schema.org and another specialized vocabulary that would Corver unlock your data. So that's does that use case make sense and reasonably with the group?
Yeah, well, I mean, it certainly makes sense to me. Marcus, does that resonate with you?
Yeah, more or less, yeah.
Okay. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I said my part. So it's...
Okay. Yeah, I guess the other thing that we need to point out is that it seems that there seems to be a pattern for at least linked data people that are using JSON-LD, and really we only have two data points right now, so who knows if that's going to be what it's, you know, what the future is going to be. But with the Vi, you know, the Vi.js and the IKS project, they were using JSON-LD as the data model in the back end, and that JSON-LD is shipped to the front end, to the JavaScript, and then the JavaScript transforms the JSON-LD into RDFA to make it editable on the page. And then once they finish editing on the page, the RDFA is lifted out of the page and then reserialized back to the data model in JSON-LD. Now, there are points there where they do use multiple, you know, or they've wanted to use multiple vocabularies. So this would be a way for them to do that, if we can figure out the, you know, the issues with compaction and everything. So there's that, and then with the Drupal folks, you know, I'm guessing, Stefan, you guys are mostly looking to JSON-LD to kind of do the same thing. You're going to keep all of this stuff in a linked data model behind the scenes and then potentially pull that linked data model out and then render it as RDFA on the screen.
Yeah, it's
right?
Just trying to keep the JSON-LD output as compatible as possible with whatever HTML serialization we use. And it seems it's a common practice to be able to have multiple properties for a given value.
Right. Greg, you're on the queue.
Yeah, the other thing to approach would be using something like, sorry, I have a new puppy here, and she barks from time to time. The other possibility would be to use something like vocabulary expansion, where we could, say, add into the term definition something like an equivalent property or sub property of type of definition that would then be able to use the same kind of vocabulary expansion that RDFA uses potentially, although it can probably done in a simpler way within JSON-LD. That might be a way to express what you want, so that the result of expansion might actually include the definitions for the equivalent or subproperty specifications.
Yeah, to some extent, I think that this feature would be that if you were stringent in your application, you should reasonably only use terms within there which are declared to be equivalent to some extent. Not always, because we don't do it in RDFA if you use multiples. But I think that either you use proper vocabulary expansion instead, which I prefer in the long term. I think that, I mean, if that's what we discussed when we define that feature in RDFA, because we didn't want yet another alternative to using RDF schema and OWL explicitly. But here in JSON-LD, we are much closer to the raw scenarios where we just want to compact primitive JSON data, and for that, I think this feature is more viable than using profiles where in RDFA proper, so to speak. So I think that this is the equivalent of that for the raw data that JSON-LD expresses today. The more RDFy the web gets, hopefully, the more natural the use of vocabulary expansion will be, and these shapes will go away if that happens. We won't use multiple terms in JSON-LD context, and we won't use multiple terms in property attributes in RDFA either, because we could just use our own tailored vocabularies, and the engines would understand them. But that's 5 to 10 years from now, probably.
Well, so I would suggest that maybe we can have a proposal that that supports the use of basically what you outlined, where we can have, I think, in the context definition for a term, an ID that has an array with multiple values, and when on upon expansion, that will result in introducing a key for each of those things in the output document with the values duplicated, but that we not support automatically applying that pattern on compaction.
Well, let's take the compaction discussion separately. So let's just do one resolution, and I think this is the we would like to support terms expanding to multiple IRIs during expansion, right? I'm sorry, Stefan, you were on the queue. Did you get to say what you wanted to?
No, I think that's what Greg was saying, to have either, I mean, the space for it to arise in the context that wasn't really appealing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what Greg was suggesting before?
Well, I interjected an alternative that looked at vocabulary expansion, but I think that was probably not wise to start to head off in a different direction, whereas this is the simplest, most direct way of stating it, and I think it's clear to would be clear to almost anyone looking at the document what was intended.
Okay, so let's say the proposal is
what I've meant here. Is that
not quite? It's I typed it in earlier. Let me find it and paste it back in. Like that. Now I think as a shortcut, we might actually allow the form that you specified as a shortcut, similarly to the way that we can have a term with an IRI expressed without being an object form. That would be pretty similar to that. So, I support both of those forms. Let me type
hold on.
Then
it would be an array, though, right?
Array.
Yeah.
Let me just type what I mean. I think that's an equivalent statement.
Yeah. Not spaces within them.
Right.
Excuse me? Yeah, not spaces within strings. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the proposal is to support a single term expanding to multiple IRIs when an array of IDs are associated with a single term in the context. All right. Do we want to talk about how to handle it in compaction now, or do we want to go through the rest of the agenda and leave that for another day?
I think we can leave it. From my point of view, the two options are, there are three options. There is the expand all of, compact if any match. That would create new triples. The other is to match only if both terms are used with the same value. That's complex, but correct. And the third would be pragmatic and dirty, something like only use the first term in the list and ignore the rest.
What was the first option you said then? I thought that was the first option.
The first would, if any term matches.
So if you had a document that expanded and used basically DCE title, and you had a context that had a term that definition that included both DCE title and schema name, that you would be able to apply that term in compaction, thus creating effectively new data, saying that you've also specified schema name.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, the third option won't work, because even if we just picked the first or any, that would happen. So either there has to be all the triples. I mean, that's not too hard to match, although it requires some work by the processor. So I think we have
those choices. I'm just concerned about the work to do in compaction and having to go through. There's a number of corner cases. You need to expand and look at every term to see if you've got these matches, and then if you might have one in one and not in the other. In some respects, it would be then simpler to apply Nicholas' first pattern, whereas any term matches causes that to be expanded, but that might also cause some duplication. So I'm just concerned about the complexity, that the compaction's already become too complex, and that this adds even further complexity to it.
Yeah, the third option then is never compact with terms that uses multiple terms for their ID. They just don't match anything.
Okay, so you're saying that they just don't compact, they'll be left as a full IRI?
Yeah.
Hmm. Not necessarily. You might now get two keys out, one with the schema name key and the other with the DC title key.
Yeah, in this case you would, because you had the prefixes, exactly. If you had just the IRIs, you'd have to have another term. That's the safest and simplest approach.
There's a case where you don't have, where you've defined the term with an array of full IRIs that are equivalent, in which case the compacted form would have to just use those IRIs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But that seems like a test corner case.
I think that's a good option, because I think I'd prefer that to creating data, and I'd prefer that to the other, where we would match Marcus' second example here, because that's just too intelligent of the compaction algorithm.
Mm. All right. Anything else on this? I mean, we'll definitely think about this for the next couple of weeks, but it sounds like we have some solutions that would work with various degrees of having drawbacks. Anything else on this before we move on to issue 144?
No,
we
should...
Separate issue for that, for this?
No, we should summarize this in the issue, I think. What was it, 142?
Yeah, I can do that.
Great, great.
Great, thank you.
Anyone can correct me later on if I missed something.
Yes.
Sure. All right, issue 144, context and coercion rules. Here is the link to that. And if I remember correctly, I had a fairly severe reaction to this. So the idea here is that you could change the meaning of terms based on where they exist in the tree. So, for example, you could have name mean something if it's used in the in a top level JSON-LD object, but if it's used, let's say, inside of an object that's associated with homepage. So, if basically you have homepage.name, that name would mean something completely different. All right. And the way that this would be accomplished is by placing nested context. So context could have nested contexts such that a term in the context could have a context within it that redefines what name and everything could be. Now, to clarify, you can already do this in JSON-LD. You just have to make sure that that context is outside of your data. You have to make sure that the context is nested in the data itself, not in the context. So the bottom line is we do support this feature, but not in this way. The benefit for this approach is that you would be able to specify all this context stuff in one place, in the top context, instead of having to redefine your context in the data. Any thoughts on this feature? Is anyone in support of adding a feature like this, or does anyone feel that this is unnecessary since we already support it? Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I'll just restate what I basically wrote yesterday there. I've explored this idea before, and I found it basically way too complex. There is a nice academic idea about it that you could just adapt to almost any kind of data, but it gets very complex to process, and worse, it gets much harder to read the data. I mean, you want to ideally know what a term means. If you mix and match things in the same JSON-LD document so much that you can't use the same term for the same meaning, you're in trouble, and as you say, Manu, we can handle this already by explicitly saying that you have context overlays. I also noted that queuing this context switch on the term used, if we were to support it, would be a bad idea. I think that it would be better, at least, to use the type as a trigger for another context, because then you could use the same expressions at the top levels. You could bind a context to a type. That's a bit less troublesome, but I still think it's too much. So I'm not in support of this at this time unless I have a convincing use case.
Okay. Yeah, and just to clarify, I really, really didn't like this feature. I think we should definitely not do it. Is there anyone in support of this feature? Okay. So the proposal is do not support embedding context within a context to redefine what a term maps to. To redefine the RI that a term maps to. Redefine the RI. Okay, I think that's right. All right, so that's resolved. All right, next up is issue 146. This one's kind of tricky. So issue 146 came about during a discussion that we were having. Let me make sure that. Yeah, this happened. This happened during a discussion we were having with Rito, and the concern here, the issue here is that often they have data. People have data that looks like this, right? Where you're expressing a latitude and a longitude coordinate. And the first set of argumentation that Rita started using is, you know, we would like to express it in compact form. It's much easier. The data is smaller, et cetera, et cetera. And the counter argument to that is always hard drives are cheap now, memory is cheap. Why does it matter? But there is another argument here, and that is that people like Twitter and a whole bunch of geolocation data matches this pattern, follows this pattern, and the idea that they're going to change what they're publishing is just they're not going to do it, right? And so there's all this geodata out there that could potentially be lost or not non-transferable to JSON-LD. The other bit has to do with, you know, specifying coordinates or lines or, circles with centers and radiuses. I mean, there's a whole bunch of data that is expressed in arrays of pairs, like tuples or triples. So the question here is, whether or not we want to support some kind of mechanism that allows you to map an array position to a specific property binding, either via what's expressed in the issue, which is basically this. Let me paste this in here. So we could support it via this entry in a context, or via what Nicholas had placed into the issue, which is, let's see, container list, the tuple-based approach that she put in there, I think is good as well. Right, they basically say that it's a list and it's a tuple that maps. So any opinions on supporting or not supporting this right now? And Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I am in support of it because I've thought of it when I saw GeoJSON specifically. And I've also came across the idea when I worked with data, with biographical data at the Royal Library, which I'm working with hopefully all this autumn as well, where we're slowly moving towards RDF and I'm using JSON-LD as the target there. There are many complications on that road though, so I cannot promise that I will be able to apply this. I will probably strive in any case to use proper terms anyway. But there are certain shapes of data right now which use this form. I'd like to transform those expressions because I think that they are cumbersome. But for GeoJSON and other kinds of data like that, measurements in general are probably very good cases for supporting this.
Okay.
Statistics and measurements.
Greg, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I definitely see value in it. I guess I'm a little concerned about overloading the list term in here. I mean, we could potentially use something like container tuple and then define the tuple out there. But really, it seems like it's pretty equivalent to the original thing in here, where it's a container with an array of the tuples being explicit. My main concerns again revolve around compacting this information. But aside from that, I think as a way to express the data and interpret it, expanding it out into a more explicit key value representation, I support the general concept of doing this.
Marcus?
Yeah, I agree with the argument. I mean, I also see value in it, but I'm somehow concerned that we are introducing too many ways to shape the data, so that without framing or some more sophisticated mechanism, you aren't able to, well, make use of the data anymore if you don't exactly know how it looks like.
Yeah, I'm equally concerned about adding. I certainly see the use case. So this is, I think, it's a completely valid use case, and it's useful. I'm very concerned about adding the rate at which we're adding features to the language right now. I feel like, you know, I guess the one point here is that the data is representable in JSON-LD. It's not terse and compact, but it's still representable. So I guess the issue here is what happens when you have JSON data and you need to transform it to JSON-LD. You can't just add a context in this case. So I guess my issue is primarily it's not. This would certainly be a nice feature to have. I'm concerned about the added complexity. So much so that it would be nice if we could figure out a way to add experimental features, but not add it to the language, or figure out a way to maybe even add this as an experimental feature, but not add it to the language for 1.0. Not sure if that would be possible though.
Yeah, I mean,
implicit in all of this is I think the complexity really lies in compaction, and we've had this notion that context application, it's entirely symmetric, is that you can use a context in order to infer meaning on data in order to expand it into a normalized form, but you should also be able to use that to get back that representation. And I think that, you know, particularly if we are going to be adding features like that, that is just unrealistic to do. The complexity becomes absurd. So I think this is a case where I believe that adding something like this does not, it certainly incrementally makes expansion more complicated. But I think it geometrically makes compaction more complicated. So I'd like to see see us start to move away from this symmetric application of contexts.
Mm-hmm. Right. I guess the concern I have is if we move away from the symmetric application of contexts, is that going to confuse developers, or are they going to understand that, well, the context is, you know, if I get data in that's, you know, quote unquote compacted, and I expand it and I apply the same context to it, I'm not going to get the same thing back. Right,
I think the question is, do you expect that developers are going to be using things like framing in order to generate their JSON-LD, or are they using sort of proprietary ways of shaping data from their knowledge domain using the features of JSON-LD to express it? I think it's the latter for the most part, because framing and in relying upon compaction it's a very difficult job for experts. It's impossible, I think, for your normal developer, which is why I think there's been some interest around Graphify and moving away from framing as a way of getting developers to do that type of thing.
Yeah. Okay, and Nicholas, you're saying that you guys use proprietary approaches to basically build the quote-unquote compacted form that you serve to developers?
Yeah.
Yeah, we do the same thing. We use framing whenever we get data in from the outside world that we need to operate and validate upon. So we need to operate upon the data coming in from the outside world, and we need to validate it. That's where we use framing to accomplish what we want, to basically shape the data into something that we can validate. Okay, well, I mean, that's good in that it shows that maybe it's okay if we don't have this symmetry there, because the idea that I'm wondering if compaction is going to turn into one of these things where developers use it only because they want to have a clean, pretty print out. It's basically the pretty print of JSON-LD, right? And it's not really used for anything other than that. I think that's useful. I don't know if you guys feel the same way about compaction. Is there something else that we think developers are going to use compaction for?
Well, for framing, for example.
Yes, but
right.
if we do the Graphify thing, then we don't really need framing.
I disagree, but, Greg, but mainly because we absolutely need. I don't understand how Graphify solves the framing problem, at least from the pace world.
Well, so framing to accomplish is two things. One, it allows you to query the data and get back a result set. Okay. The other is it allows you to specify a shape for the data. So I believe that Graphify addresses the shape issue because it ensures that all of your object, all of your subject references are replaced with links to the subject definitions, and you can just do dot notation to continue to access things. But it doesn't do the query thing, and that's why I put out that missive last night on basically thoughts on how BGP could be used to basically do a search across that graph of data.
But, Greg, how would you navigate the graph then if you don't compact it? Would you use the full IRIs for all the properties?
Oh, I don't know that you'd... I'm not sure that you don't compact it. The way I'm doing things, I'm taking a compacted form that I generate, and I the only thing that I don't compact is the ID references. So what I effectively do is I always output a flattened structure. I keep the subject references explicit, so that I can easily go down, and when I find a subject reference, I can just replace it with the value of that within the array containing all of the subject definitions, if it exists. If it doesn't exist, then I just mark the thing as being unresolved and deal with it later on. That's what I do internally. So I do think compaction's useful, and as a formal definition, what you would do is you take a JSON document, you would flatten it, which includes merging subject definitions, and then compact it, or at least do some subset of compaction. But like I say, in my case, I'm not actually using the algorithms to do that. I'm using the concepts.
Right. Okay, so we're at 11:30. We're at 90 minutes now. I don't know if we've discussed this issue enough to actually do a straw poll on it. It sounds like in general we may want to support it, but I know I'm very concerned about the added complexity. Even with Even with doing the sim, breaking the symmetry between compaction and expansion, I'm still concerned that we're adding lots of features in here that I'm still not convinced that this is something that JSON-LD absolutely needs. Do other people feel that we have enough discussion for a straw poll on it, though?
Well, I'll just throw in a little anecdote. I actually had lunch with Dave Beckett yesterday, and what he said about Turtle was that he basically put in the minimum features necessary, and only when people really complained loudly did he add a new feature. And that seems like a pretty good way to design a language. And I am concerned that we have sort of been, it's a little bit of too much for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe in fact what we want to look is at something more like macros, which is intended to shape incoming data into something that a JSON-LD processor can handle. So that we're not, that would handle the wiki data case, that handles this case, can handle a number of other cases that are certainly very useful when trying to deal with normal JSON, but trying to bring them into the full representation is starting to make the language unwieldy, and we should definitely be looking for features to throw out.
All right. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, gotta run pretty soon. But yeah, I'm on the verge. I mean, I like many of these suggestions. I find them very usable, but I'm also concerned about the complexity, and we might want to think about what Greg said, some kind of macro. I don't want it to be procedural, though. I prefer to have something as declarative as only using JSON for it, if possible. Although I could imagine we extending that to using syntax for regexts or IRI templates and things like that, only as long as we keep it declarative. So we might want to define some kind of third thing which won't go to be part of the 1.0 through W3C at this time, which would be some kind of GRDDL for JSON-LD, if you will, with a defined macro language for it, for expansion plus. Because I like many of these IDs, and I don't want them to just float indefinitely. I would like to put them into something, but I'm quite fine with not putting them into the 1.0 compaction, but in something more powerful and in beta for a long time.
Yeah, so maybe what we're talking about is some kind of just maybe releasing a set of APIs that allow a pre-processing step for the JSON-LD, and maybe this is something that we would attach to a JSON-LD, like the JSON-LD API. Like, we have a pre-processing step that you can attach, and you can do a number of pre-processing. That might actually work out for all of these issues that we're talking about. If we add a pre-processing step to the JSON-LD API, so basically this thing is executed before any of the other JSON-LD operations are performed, we could get the mapping an ID to an IRI mechanism in there. We can get this conversion of arrays into something JSON-LD can understand in there. So maybe there needs to be a pre-processing and a post-processing, a set of functions that are pre-processing functions and post-processing functions that you can register with the JSON-LD API. And then it's just recipes. After that, it's just we allow people to just add recipes. How does that sound?
The thing is that that will still be tied to implementation. It wouldn't be trying to specify something declarative.
Right, but it's kind of a it is still tied to the implementations, but we could still outline what the algorithms are elsewhere, right? And then people can choose to implement them as kind of these little functional snippets in whatever language it is. So for JavaScript, it's pretty easy, but same kind of goes for Python and Ruby. You could just, you know, give it a function that is a pre-processing step that will convert, let's say, all of your geodata over to, you know, something that JSON-LD can work with.
Yeah.
Well, maybe one of the ways to do it is through the callback mechanism, where we expand the callback to be basically every processing step that allows a processor to replace the data that's in the document with something new. I guess there's an issue of providing it with enough context to know what to do, but.
That's the thing. I think that I want something which is an extension of the context definitions and something declarative, because just specifying algorithms, to me, I'm kind of in the, who was it, Raymond in the Cathedral and the Bazaar, who said something like, give me the data and I usually don't need the algorithms. So I want something which just speaks to me in a spec.
Yeah, I'd certainly like to have something that you can put in a distiller or playground that would what you want, that wouldn't require you to have a code window up and program in JavaScript.
Yeah. but I want to capture the same things so that you can apply anything to that.
So perhaps some form of another section within a context, or some other keywords that are evaluated within a context that are used for sort of this macro pre-processing step.
Yeah, this is similar to how we've done with framing, which is extracted and not part of the 1.0 process. That's a companion to compaction. We could have a companion to expansion, which would be this gleaning macro thingy in declarative form.
And I think that would also address Lennon and Stefan's use case.
Yeah, at least they'd see that certain features were on the trajectory towards standardization, and they could start applying those as experiments, and we'll see convergence on the things that will be usable, and if they are usable enough, they might be included in the expansion, probably not before 1.0, but 1.1 perhaps.
Okay. All right. Well,
One other thing I'll throw in there is, if there was some way of doing flattening without first doing expansion, then that would allow the original JSON representation to be sort of maintained without requiring the compaction be used to get back to it. So.
Yeah.
Something to think about.
True.
Okay. All right. We are definitely over our 90 minutes now, but we got a lot done today. Great job to everyone, and we'll go ahead and continue this discussion next week. I'm guessing next week we're probably going to talk about some of the API issues as well as the compaction issues and the rest of this pre-processing versus declarative step that we might want to put in the API. So I am guessing we're going to probably move on to API issues next week. Anything else that we need to be aware of before next week? All right. Thanks for the call, guys. Have a good week.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.